I mean, I'm getting I'm not thrilled, as you might imagine.
Welcome to another episode of the Casino Reports podcast, Low Rollers. I'm Eric Raskin, joined by my co-host, Jeff Edelstein. And we're going to try something a little different this week. We want to keep the show moving, keep it crisp, keep it to a tight half hour. So for every second this podcast goes over a half hour, we will donate 10 cents to the Boys and Girls Club of America. I mean, we're low rollers. A dime per second is actually pretty generous for a podcast with that name. We bet responsibly. We charitably donate responsibly too. Jeff, I don't know if you watched the Emmys at all with Nate Bargatze's, let's call it polarizing bit, but got any post-Emmys thoughts? Any strong takes on the Pitt over Severance or any other results?
I can live with the Pitt over Severance. I can. I mean, Pitt, did you watch the Pitt?
I love the Pitt, and as much as I love Severance, I do think I'll take season one of Severance over season one of the Pitt, but I think Pitt season one beating Severance season two is the right call.
Yeah, and I like I think the Pitt had going for it the old Hollywood thing, right? Old 10 years ago, where they're
Right.
it's a series, 15 episodes. It's a real season,
Right.
almost not
Right. I
quite
guess
so much.
not so much old Hollywood, but traditional network TV, even though it wasn't on a network, that sort of
Right.
feel. Yeah.
Yes, and plus it was filmed in California, which in Hollywood, which apparently nothing gets filmed out there anymore. So
Okay.
yeah, I could see how that does. And Noah Wyle, gets his,
Yes.
gets
Oh,
a nod. So all in
he
all,
so
yeah.
deserved to win. Like that one was a foregone conclusion. I thought that I would have been really pissed if he hadn't won. I really like. I couldn't take strong issue with like any of the winners except I'm really tired of seeing Hacks get awarded anything. I'm glad it didn't win Best Series, but Gene Smart's won enough times already. That show is not good anymore.
I stopped watching it. Yeah, I don't
Yeah, it
watch it
just
anymore.
it's not very good anymore. It keeps getting nominated, and I think Hannah Einbinder's acting is kind of one of the weak points of the show, and she won too. So those bothered me. Everything else I was kind of okay with.
Somebody somewhere. I watched the first season. I
Yes.
never went back to it. Should I go back?
It's very good. It's not like a must watch, but it's very
Right.
good. And that's actually you that was the low light of my evening. I turned into my father as we were watching the guy who won, Jeff Hiller.
Right.
I didn't even remember he was nominated. And early in the show, there's like a crowd shot and they show him. And I turned to my wife and I said, "Oh, look, it's the guy from the show." That was the best I could do in the moment. And it brought me back to one time when I was a kid and my dad was talking about the show with the kid, which he meant the Wonder Years. And I was supposed to know what the show with the kid was. But so there I am. I can't think of a name of a person or a name of a show. I'm almost useless at this point, Jeff.
Yeah, join the club. I'll tell you somebody who's not useless is our guest today. It's the Sports Grid CEO and, as you'll soon find out, owner of a 94th percentile beard, Jeremy Stein. But before we get to that, first, as always, plenty of news to discuss.
Yeah, and we had all the usual topics in the news this week. Prediction markets, which we will get to, New York casinos, which we will get to. But probably the biggest news and where we'll start this week is with sweeps. Not a great week for the sweepstakes gambling industry, as on Friday, in a clean sweep, a vote of 63-0, the California Assembly passed AB 831, the bill to ban sweepstakes casinos and sports books. And so it moved along to Governor Gavin Newsom. He has three choices. He can veto the bill, although both chambers passed it unanimously. They'd probably just override his veto anyway. He could sign it, or he could do nothing, which is effectively the same as signing it, as it would then become law through inaction on October 12th. Let's assume this is becoming law in California one way or the other. Jeff, you spoke to some experts on this topic this week. What could it mean for sweeps if and when the games are banned in California?
Yeah, I mean, depending on your point of view, it either goes from not great to disastrous. Those are your two options. On the not great front, there's still plenty of states where it's legal. California, according to one of the guys I talked to from EKG, represents 17% of the sweeps industry. So that's not a small number, obviously, but there's still 83% of it out there. Something I didn't realize that a lot, I don't know which states, but many states tax the purchase of the coins. So
Yeah,
they're
I didn't know that
getting,
till I saw it in your article.
yeah, I didn't know it either. So incentive to not ban it, I guess. On the negative side, according to a fellow I talked to at Regulus, am I pronouncing that correctly? I
I
hope
think so.
so.
That would have been
Close
my
enough.
guess, yeah.
Some 42% of the nation is now either under a sweeps ban or like a near sweeps ban, or they're talking about a sweeps ban. It doesn't feel great for sweeps when you lose California. It doesn't feel great for anything if you lose California. Not having California is one thing. Losing California feels worse.
Yes, that's a good way to frame it, and yeah, that's the perspective that we're coming from with regard to sweep specifically. I thought it was an interesting point that Matt Kaufman from EKG raised that some of the resources the operators put into California will be relocated elsewhere, but he may have been reaching there for that being a significant silver lining, and they're still taking a massive hit. And big picture. The momentum is terrible. The desire for new people to get into this space now has to be almost non-existent.
Yeah.
Look, this isn't the end of sweeps. There will always be certain states that just don't care, that look the other way, but it's a shrinking business now, and it was freaking booming a year ago. It was one
Right.
year ago that I interviewed investor Davis Catlin while he was at G2E, and he was telling me, "It's all sweeps. Every business idea is sweeps. Everyone here is talking about sweeps." That was just a year ago. I guess they got too big. They flew too close to the sun. Someone took notice, and it feels like it went from there to here real fast.
Yeah, it sure did. Yeah, it feels. I'm not. I don't know what the. It doesn't feel great for sweeps, but I mean, I'm not saying that with someone with any knowledge, because if you asked a year ago, it said, "Well, it looks great for sweeps," and now it doesn't look so great for sweeps. But who knows what the hell's going to happen? But it is interesting. You know, it's very much worth noting, like the point that you just made. Prediction markets, right? Like, you know, oh, it's pre everything's prediction markets now. Poly market's got it's $10 billion valuation. You know, listen, everyone believes that this is going to end up at the Supreme Court, right? And let's not forget, sports betting became legal in America due to the fall of PASPA. It was a states' rights issue, period, full stop, the end. It was a states' rights issue, and if the Supreme Court, even at its current makeup, they're a big states' rights issue court.
Right.
It seems like prediction markets are going to get their asses handed to them down the road. Again, who knows, right? But it seems kind of, I mean, if I had to bet on it, if it was in front of the Supreme Court today, assuming no outside pressures, you
Well,
know, wink, wink, nod, nod,
that's an assumption we should not make.
right? But assuming no outside pressures, you would think that they would say, yeah, it's up to each individual state whether or not they want to allow this, which would be a disaster for prediction markets, obviously. So, you know, talk to me in 5 years on that one, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that's it. The comparison is a good one to say, yeah, look where we were with sweeps a year ago and look where we are now. And so don't assume where we're going to be a year from now with prediction markets. Who the hell knows? But I guess it is probably a longer timeline with prediction markets that I would still, I don't even want to begin to guess what it looks like 1 year from now. But the big ultimate decision is still several years off. Most likely.
Sure.
So, but yeah, things just move so much more quickly in the world and our world at the moment. So, looks bad for sweepstakes right now. I guess we can't rule out things turning around in their favor, especially if they can get some of the right people who wield influence on their side.
Since we brought up prediction, should we just jump ahead and finish our talk on prediction markets?
Do things out of the order that I have on my
I know,
outline.
I've never advocated that before. It
Wow, I
seems
don't know if I
crazy.
can handle this sort of improvisation, but okay, sure. Let's talk some prediction markets and then we'll double back to New York casinos. Couple bits of news. We have Arizona sending a letter to regulated operators warning them that if they operate prediction markets anywhere, they could be risking their licenses in Arizona. And separately, Massachusetts is suing Kalshi, and Robinhood is suing Massachusetts in response. We've seen these storylines before, but now they're in new locations. What do you want to say about any of this news, Jeff?
Yeah, I think, so Arizona is who? What's the other state that's done that? Do you know off the top of your head?
Ohio.
Ohio. So that's an interesting play, right? If you, it's like basically saying to FanDuel and DraftKings, don't you dare. But at the same time, like it seems so backwards because they're saying don't you dare. But in the meantime, like there's nothing we can do. Like I don't know, you're playing by the rules that we set out, but we can't stop other people from not playing by the rules. So I don't know. It feels unfair, I guess, to DraftKings and FanDuel.
That's exactly the word I had jotted down in my notes here to just say that it's completely unfair. It discourages companies doing things the right way, but at the same time, I get where Arizona's coming from. It punishes the people that have played by the rules.
Yeah. So who knows? Massachusetts getting involved does not surprise me in the least bit. Yeah, I mean, I think, we can talk about prediction markets and what's going to happen to our blue in the face. But I again, like, it is going to, it seems like a foregone conclusion this ends up in front of the Supreme Court. And so I guess this is just, we're going to be talking about this on and on and on as more and more states try, to do something about it. I'm waiting for Texas to do something about it, waiting for California to do something about it, that's probably the bigger ones. But in the meantime, there's nothing to do about it because I don't know. I wish I could self-certify. I'll tell you that right now.
What would you self-certify to allow yourself to do that you are currently not certified for?
I mean, you name it, I do live in a house with a wife, so like there's a lot of things that I need,
That you need
there's
her to certify, but you would like to just be able to bypass and self-certify.
Yeah, whatever it may be, I'm not,
Right.
like, but, I'm not, like, a sixth beer, let's say, something like that, I need, I'm not allowed to,
Just have the sixth beer and don't tell anyone. Or is
well,
she counting? Is she looking over your shoulder?
there has been a time or two when she's like, well, how many did you drink? I'm like,
Oh,
well, I
right.
only had three. Well, but there were six in there. I'm like,
Yeah, you
and so,
need
yeah,
to you
that
need to
happens occasionally.
you need to channel your inner Kalshi and just self-certify and deal with the consequences later.
Yeah, I mean, I like to self-certify. I don't want to wake up in the morning and get the kids ready for school, self-certified,
Yeah. Okay. So, this is a great last conversation prior to your divorce.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our final news item. A bit of a twist in the New York casino bidding saga. I kind of assumed these community advisory committees were a formality, and if the proposal didn't suck too hard, it would get passed along to the State Gaming Commission to pick their three faves. But on Wednesday, two bids were swatted down by their CACs. The Times Square proposal from Caesars and Jay-Z's Roc Nation voted down 4-2. And the Avenir on the West Side, also a no vote, also 4-2. So now just six contenders remain. It is beyond obvious that the two existing racinos are getting two of the licenses. Now it sure feels like Metropolitan Park has the inside track for the third. Jeff, you have declared you're not schlepping out to Yonkers or Queens. Your thoughts on this week's news?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised slash disappointed. I was really pulling for the Caesars one. I thought that would have been fun, for no lack of a better term. It would have just been one more thing in Times Square, to add. I mean, Times Square, it's Times Square, and it would have been one more thing to add to Times Square. I don't see an issue with it. But yeah, I mean, Steve Cohen, betting against Steve Cohen, I never felt great about it. I always had the Metropolitan Park as my fourth favorite to get it. Just because when you're Steve Cohen, like, you make things move, so yeah, I would guess that that's where it's going to land. And so then you have the two racinos, and then you have what will probably end up being like the I'm guessing the insert, what's the best Vegas casino, like, you know what I'm saying? Like I would assume that the Metropolitan
Oh,
Park
I see.
property would be
It's a
the
maybe
one.
more in Atlantic City terms where there are fewers. That's the Borgata, and
That's
the
the Borgata.
others are Tropicana and the Showboat. Is the
That's what it
Showboat?
feels like to me,
Right.
right? That's what it feels like to me. But you know, again, who knows? Nobody knows. But yeah, I'm surprised. I'm surprised so much power is given to these community boards, number one.
Right.
Six people just get to decide, you know, which is
Yeah,
bananas.
that's why I was so surprised. It just like I just sort of figured, all right, unless this bid is a disaster, it's going to move along, and then the commission will decide. But yeah, they have a lot of power, apparently, these six people.
Yeah. And what it does do, I mean, assuming Manhattan doesn't get one now, and I think that's a pretty safe assumption,
Well, there is still
that
one Manhattan bid, but.
there is, I don't know, but it doesn't feel, I don't know, Steve Cohen's not going to lose this, I don't think, at this point. But the point being, like, assuming, let's say Manhattan does not get one,
Right.
that means that these are just actual New York casinos, not American casinos. You follow what I'm saying?
Not
Nobody
entirely.
who's visiting New York from Japan or Idaho or Iowa is
Right.
going to go to the Racinos or the Citi Field just to have a gamble. If it was in Times Square, they
Right.
would. You
Right.
follow? You follow?
Right. Right.
So,
It's right. It becomes more of a you have to very consciously plan to go to any of these pl places or live in one of those boroughs, basically. Right. Yeah.
I don't think it hurts Atlantic City at all as a result, or any, you know, any worse than it's already been hurt from, you know, through the years.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. As someone who lives in New Jersey, right, at the tri-state area, it feels
Right.
like a casino at Citi Field means, I guess, if I go to a Mets game, maybe I'll stop by the casino, but
Right.
probably not, you know. But I'm not, like, there's no chance in hell anyone from North Jersey's going to say, hey, let's run out to the casino at Citi Field.
Right.
It would be, hey, let's run down to Atlantic City. It's an easier drive, you know.
Right.
It's just, you
For
know, that way.
you, I guess for someone who lives in Manhattan, obviously it would have been easier for them if the casino's in Manhattan, but
Right.
I do think,
Take a train.
easy enough to take a train
Yeah.
out and have a night at the casino in Queens instead of driving to Atlantic City or taking a bus to Atlantic City or whatever.
Good.
But
True enough.
I have to my mind does go to some conspiratorial places with this. Like I wonder if it was already decided who's winning, and so the CACs are doing the rejecting so that the Gaming Commission isn't left with much of a choice.
Wait a second.
Yes,
You
yes.
think that it's
Uh-huh.
possible that with billions of dollars on the line and gambling being involved, that there might be some backroom cigar smoking deals happening that we don't know about? No.
I know it sounds crazy, but it is possible. And here's where things really could get out of control. If the Bally's bid that would then indirectly
Right.
enrich the Trump family wins this thing, you better believe I'm taking all the tinfoil I can find and fashioning a hat out of it.
That's
But I
fair.
mean, but that still seems unlikely. Yeah, it does seem Steve Cohen has this just about in the bag. And I just want this to be over so that maybe Adabo's online casino bill can start to maybe get some
Yeah.
traction next year. I
Yeah.
kind of doubt it will, but at least this has to get out of the way first before that can start to happen, it seems.
Clearing the decks.
All right, enough of that. We don't want to cost the Boys and Girls Club any more money. Let's bring on our guest. This month marks 1 year since SportsGrid announced its intention to pivot its content more toward iGaming and casino, so it seems a fine time to check in with the CEO of SportsGrid, Jeremy Stein, for the latest on what his company is up to, as well as for his thoughts on a variety of hot topics in the gambling world. So he joins us now on the podcast. Jeremy, welcome to Low Rollers.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So start by giving us an update on where the transition stands with adding more casino content, with adding Brian Christopher's show. What does the sports to casino split look like for you these days, and what's still in the works?
So, casino's been on our roadmap for a very long time. SportsGrid is not just the sports betting channel, right? We've cultivated a large audience that likes all forms of gambling content. We did a survey a while back, and 90% of our audience has an interest in casino, whether it's retail, social, sweepstakes, or online. So, We thought that this was a really good way to super serve our operating partners who already operate online casinos, so we could branch out beyond, sportsbook. And it's also a way for us to expand our market, right? Because there are a lot of different subsets of online gaming. It's something that fits. We've always been looking at SportsGrid for what's our next vertical. We've looked at finance, we've looked at crypto, things that would be adjacent to our audience. And honestly, online casino seems like the absolute perfect fit. To answer the first part of your question, right? We have been developing casino content for well over a year. It first aired, honestly, last October. And Brian's show began in January, and we have a number of concepts that are in development with Brian, and we have a number of concepts that are in development with other talent and, a wide swath of operating partners. So while we're just beginning to talk about our strategy, it's been in the works for a very long time. We think at some point in the future, our content will be 50-50 sports, 50-50 casino. And part of that is because you can't replace the NFL, right? The NFL is a juggernaut when it comes to viewership. Live sports do drive television viewership. So we're never going to replace that portion of our funnel because it benefits everybody.
Can you take us behind the scenes a little bit on just the conversations about what the content, what sorts of content you might do? It's obvious to everyone with sports, to have there's just so much to talk about and analyze with regard to any upcoming slate or futures bets or yada yada. Casino is a little less obvious, I think, how you go about covering it. So what were some of those internal conversations like of how are we going to do this?
So we're looking at creating new content. And what I mean by that is if you look at the casino streaming world, it's dominated by slots. It is people that are putting up, themselves streaming slots online or they're in a casino. And what you find in that realm is the games are really the star, right? It's not necessarily the talent. A lot of the time you are stopping because games are already optimized for your attention. So our idea is to put true talent into this type of environment where you're not just watching for the game, you're watching for the talent. So we're looking at a wide variety of game shows, right? We really want to change the narrative, all the way to, a concept that we call the Luck Truck, right? Where we're developing, social casino truck. It's a semi truck and it's, a publisher's clearinghouse type concept where it rolls up to, people's homes in middle America. So there's a lot of fun things that are out there. We also talk about the lifestyle of Las Vegas, right? Las Vegas is an aspirational product and it's not just specific to casino. There's certainly shows that are out there where you could do Anthony Bourdain parts unknown style shows in Las Vegas and cover restaurants. There are parts of casinos, whether it's rooms and things like that, that really perform well on social that we think will perform exceptionally well in our category too. While we're probably going to end up with, a good degree of slots and streaming, like that's really not our core focus. We really want to reinvent the game. We live in a different medium. It's television, right? It's not just YouTube. So it needs to be a style of content that actually lends itself well to our medium.
The idea of watching people play casino is seems well seemed foreign to me, but then like I find myself like just this morning on TikTok watching a live video of four screwdrivers mechanically trying to break open a plastic bag filled with fish food with a bunch of fish underneath, and I spent about 5 or 6 minutes watching this, waiting for it to happen. It didn't happen, and I think I said out loud, "What the F am I doing?" This is insane, but I feel like that's the same kind of principle that applies to watching people play casino. Like it's so wildly different than watching something on Sports Grid that has that's sports based. I'm looking for information. I'm looking for, actionable information, right? Whereas with the slot stuff, I'm just watching to kind of pass the time, right? And so they're so the and then this plus what you're talking about the Bourdain style stuff, it's so wildly different to me than the sports stuff. So how is this married for you? Is it something like how does your basically, how is your brain separating the two? Because I mean, it feels like it's two completely different styles of content, two completely businesses, two completely
Isn't
different
it, Scott? Let
businesses.
me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How did you find that piece of content?
I just blink, 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 and I landed on it.
Yeah, it was basically serviced to you from a feed, right?
Right.
So the internet is data, right? There's billions upon billions of data points out there, right? And something in the algorithm said, hey, this piece of content, it's right for you. There's probably a lot of other social data points where it makes sense in that, it worked for a lot of other people. So it's not random that this came for you. And it's the same with slot machines. Think about the billions upon billions of dollars that have been invested in these games that are optimized for your attention, right? So when you put a game like that into an environment like YouTube, you're combining all of these data points, right? And it is something that is just super optimized for your attention. You're going to stop when you scroll, and that makes a lot of sense. And look, my world is no different. There's a reason every single sports show looks the same, right? You have the dual screens with, a host on one side and a host on the other. It's because that his style has been focus tested to death. Right? That is like the optimal style show. So when we're building pieces of content for our environment, that's really what we're also focusing on. Everything we do and everything a lot of other people do is really data driven.
I want to go off topic for a second before, I want to make sure I get this in. It's a very important question. I think you could answer it. Why haven't I won the DraftKings Million Maker
It's hard to do. I haven't won it yet. So I've got
yet?
hardware up here in the back. And as far, sorry, give me one second here.
No, it's totally
Yep.
fine.
Sorry about that. My daughter just got home from kindergarten and it's going to be disaster. All right. So I have not won the Millie Maker either, right? I've won a live final and I came in second in another. I've got the hardware up here. It is unbelievably difficult to win the Millie Maker. And honestly, it's unbelievably difficult to win a live final. When you get to a live final, right, the edge is actually in qualifying because I'm playing what I believe to be a less sophisticated group of players than myself. But once you actually get to the event itself, it's a very sharp room, right? A lot of people play it the same way. So, the edges are much smaller. The Millie Maker, honestly, it's tough. Like it's very difficult to be profitable in an event like that. It's a very high variance contest, and you would have to play for, I believe, a very long period of time, just to know whether you might be a winning player or not. And
Yeah.
honestly, what I believe at this point in time is I don't believe that there are any winning players. I think that anybody that's winning, in these style of contests, it's just variance.
Yeah.
I think that they're very high raked contests. They're very high variance contests. And at the end of the day, there's no such thing as a sleeper in the NFL anymore. We're researching 15-year-olds at this point. So the access to information that everybody has, the fact that these games have been around for a long time and they're so highly studied, the edge is absolutely minimal, and you should only play for entertainment purposes.
I do. Do you still dabble in DFS, or have you hung it up?
I have not played DFS in years.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. One, time.
Sure.
But two, I'm the kind of person that if I'm playing a game, like I want to beat it, and I just don't believe that it's beatable anymore.
Right. Real quick, I don't know if we're going to have for the listeners, I don't know if we have your daughter toddling in there from kindergarten. But I just want to mention, and Eric probably can speak to this as well, we have older children, and I was interrupted last week on a different podcast when my 16-year-old son came up to the window with typed the word in like 80-point font money on his phone and just handed up like
No, this is one of like the best parts actually that happened with COVID is
Yes.
you get to see the other side of a lot of your colleagues, right? You only know them as your coworker, you only see the work personality, but being able to sit in my house and like have these interruptions and say, hey, look, my dog is underneath my desk and bark. It's the human side of people, and I really appreciate that.
That's funny, it's true.
Well, so bringing it back to what one more question on the online casino front. How important to your business model and your plans is the legalization of online casino. Obviously, in most states there are casinos, so there's an interest in casino all across the country, and in watching the games and in a lot of the content you're producing. But still, online casino as legalization has seemingly stalled out, at least for now. How big a deal is that for you?
I think it's important. Look, we are going to focus on retail casino. We focus on sweepstakes. We can be a global platform. But at the end of the day, the United States is the largest market, right? And there are a lot of growth opportunities in the event that states do come online, right? It's not just important to SportsGrid, it's important to every stakeholder in our industry. Online casino is a higher margin product. There's a lot of demand for it. And I think that as states do come online, right, you're going to see a lot more budgets open up, which is not just good for me, right? It's good for every participant in our industry. So I do think it is really important. It's going to happen. It's going to be slow, right? This is going to be something that plays out over the next decade. It's not like it's going to be like sports betting where, the government flips a switch and overnight, overnight, right? 5 years, you have over 30 states that are coming online. But yes, look, sports betting, it's a known quantity. Everybody knows the LTVs, they're well established. We know what states are going to come online next. But online casino, it is a completely different animal. It's something we're excited about, but it's going to be slow.
And then one other topic that I really am curious for your take on, that's related to all the things that you do. I wrote a piece this week on the struggles of some gambling content creators on YouTube since the new rules in March that marked a lot of videos as 18 plus. It's not that the creators mind their videos being age restricted, but they mind the other effects, the way it hurts monetization and discoverability. As someone in the gambling video content business, what are your thoughts on what's been happening on YouTube?
So it's interesting, right? Because we began SportsGrid. We started before sports betting was legal. And our thesis was we're media. We can operate anywhere. Like I currently operate in the state of California, and my content is displayed there, even though sports betting is not legal in that state. So, our thesis is that, look, there's a market for this content. And even though, it's not legal in certain states, people should be able to consume it. And on the platforms that we operate on, we don't have any age restrictions. But I do understand where YouTube is coming from. I understand that it will impact the growth of these creators. But in reality, right, I think what it's actually highlighting is it's highlighting the fact that a lot of the streamers are grossly overpaid. They're charging for their entire audience and the entirety of their audience when only actually a subset of those people are valuable to the operators that are sponsoring the content. I think that that shows the disconnect of I want to charge for my whole audience versus the part that's actually valuable. And in reality, it shouldn't impact operators' incomes all that much because if you're not 18 or 21 plus, you're not going to be able to play on those sites anyways. So I actually think that it's a net positive to the operator. And unfortunately, as a streamer, when you build in somebody else's playground, when you build in a walled garden like that, you are at the mercy of the platforms. And that is the reality, of that world.
All right, Jeff, any final questions for you to try to identify why you are not a millionaire yet, as long as we still have Jeremy here? I know you're just basically looking for someone
I'm going to
to
hop in
ex
on that point too. Somebody that, has two big trophies up here. It's expensive to win $1 million. Like, I'm not saying that I had like a bad ROI, but I'm just saying that in the NBA championship, I think I spent $750K to win $1 million. It's a great ROI, but I will
Wow.
say that if I did not win, I would have been deeply, deeply in the hole.
Were you married at the time?
No, I wasn't.
There you go.
It's a very interesting thing to explain to your now wife's parents what it is you do for a living.
The last thing actually I do want to say is, as we're three men with beards here, I'm going to give you a little Portnoy, like one bite, everyone knows the rules rating. This guy's beard is awesome, Eric. I mean, look,
It
it's
is a
perfectly formed.
quality beard.
It's a, I mean, that's a 9.4.
I don't know your exact
You might
age,
be
Jim.
on to the new social thing with no age restrictions. I'm afraid my beard.
I don't know your exact age, Jeremy, but I assume it's less than ours, and that's what your beard clearly wins in terms of the color of it.
Well, that's a
You
big
have a
one, just to
huge leg
start,
up on
right?
us. I'm getting there. I'm 39.
Ugh.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
A baby.
A baby. I don't feel like one.
But for the record, your beard color is all natural or do not want to
It is.
reveal?
I'm
Okay.
starting to get gray hairs. You just can't see them with the zoom, but they're there.
The
Okay.
gray happened quick. I was looking at pictures of myself when I had kids around Jeremy's age. It was solid black. And I think I literally I my son probably said something to me, and that was it. I woke up the next morning, I was gray.
Yeah, maybe if I run into you guys at G2E and I'm all gray, I'm just gonna blame you for
That's
that color.
it.
Hopefully it won't happen that quickly for you. But for now, anyway, 9.4 for the beard is the
Yeah.
official rating from Jeff. So congratulations on that. And
I'm gonna put that in the handle of all my social media.
I
9.4 beard.
I've never gotten a beard rating from you, Jeff. I'm certainly not a 9.4, but what am I scoring here?
know. I'm probably going 6'8", 6'9". It's just the gray knocks it down. You can't be higher than, I mean,
Right.
unless you're Clooney.
Fair.
You got to be Clooney.
Well, right. Yes.
And
All right.
I'm sorry to say, there's no Clooney. Put us together, we're not a Clooney.
No. All right. We've strayed a little off topic, but we appreciate you hanging out with us here, Jeremy. Congratulations again on the high beard score. Looking forward to more of what's to come with Sports Grid. And where can everyone go to learn more about Sports Grid and what you're doing there?
You can find us on our website, sportsgrid.com, or on every single connected television in the United States.
There you go. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Jeremy.
Thank you for having me.
All right, our thanks again to Jeremy and to his daughter for her cameo. Jeff, I'm going to break your cardinal rule right now. I'm going to talk about my fantasy team. So feel free to tune me out, but I have
Sure.
a point here. I swear that I
Okay.
do. I mentioned a few weeks ago that I ended up doing 7 best ball drafts this year, a record for me. And thank God I did, because I need to have those to sweat, because in my one and only home league, just 2 weeks into the season, I am drawing dead. I blew the draft to an epic extent. My team sucks, and nobody has popped on the waiver wire to help me turn things around. Nobody in our league really does trades. Nobody would want to trade for what I have available. Anyway, I'm dead. I won't get into my whole roster, but just to give you a sense, I had the last pick, which is not ideal, but I wasn't even worried. I figured no problem. Still lots of good players available at the 12-13 turn. I took Genty and Brian Thomas Jr. Both
Not great when it
disasters
comes
so
out, right?
far. At the
Yeah.
next turn, I used one of my picks on Travion Henderson. Disaster. Last week, my opponent scored 152.84 points. Pretty good week. I scored 60.98. Mike Evans was my leading scorer with 10.6. Everyone else, single digits. Just a terrible team, top to bottom. I made all the wrong picks. I may finish 0-14. I'm a 28-point underdog against my brother this week. So, hooray for best ball and for DFS and sports betting and online poker and online casino. I guess I'll be okay.
You'll be all
But
right.
seriously, worst fantasy football team ever. I am the nut low, Jeff. Good thing I'm a low roller.
Well, listen, if you're going to get to talk about your fantasy football team, then I'm going to talk about my fantasy football team. Why the hell not? My
Sure.
home league that I'm in, we are celebrating our 40th, 4-0 year. Yes, 40. Things have changed a lot since that first year. I mean, back then, we had to wait until Wednesday's newspapers to get the Monday night box score. No
Right.
joke. In most games on Sunday, you didn't know the stats, never mind who scored a touchdown. You had to wait until you see the paper the next day. And occasionally that West Coast game that ended at 7:30 didn't even make the paper. It was terrible. Everything that we did tabulated by hand. No computers. We had to do this by hand. The first pick in the draft, I remember distinctly, was Dan Fouts. Dan Fouts is 74 years old today. Listen, when Dan Fouts was born, Benjamin Franklin was still alive. Oh, wait a second. Wait a minute.
No,
No,
can't be
that's wrong.
right.
Tony Franklin, the kicker was still alive, and I drafted him 5th in the first round. And
Wow.
actually, Tony Franklin actually is still alive. God bless him. Works for the K-League Auto Group in San Antonio, Texas. So there you go. Also, I'm currently in first place in my league, so suck it, Parsippany Fantasy Football League. Until next week, we are low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.